Welcome to Breaking Barriers. You know your path. We know the obstacles. And we can teach you how to tear them down. And now your host, CEO and founder of Adapting Social, John Vigero.
So, all right. So, guys, welcome back to Breaking Barriers. This is one that I'm extremely excited for. So there's so many things that we're going to talk about today, but introducing Michael Cintron, a.k.a. Mr. Cintron, a.k.a. coach, a.k.a. husband, a.k.a. leader, and the list goes on and on and on. So there are so many different things that people know you for, you know, in the realms of sports, education, now in business, you know, for people out there that don't know who Michael Cintron is, give us a quick summary of who you are.
First, Johnny, I got to say thank you. I mean, being a part of this, being a part of what's going on with Adapting, everything that you guys do, help people grow. It's awesome. It's a super pleasure.
Yeah.
Who am I? My name is Michael Cintron, right? So I'm a local boy, grew up here in Ocean County, spent my whole life here, and have always had these visions and desires of leadership. And I don't know, but 20-something years ago, I got involved in education. And I've been coaching for 20, 30 years, various sports, football, basketball, softball, at a local school district. And I've been teaching history, U.S. history, world history. Got a lot going on personally, as recently we kicked off, just 6 months ago, we kicked off Cintron's Coastal Catering.
Love that.
Super stoked about what's going on. So grateful for all the support that we've been receiving.
Yeah.
Especially from you, Johnny, really.
Yeah. No, dude, I'm so stoked for you, and I'm so proud of you getting out of the realm, because one of the things that I want to talk about, you know, later in the podcast, maybe we'll start a little bit earlier. We'll get deep into it later. We'll start now is, right. You know, I've seen so many things on social media. So social media has now been a way for us to just see a lens into everybody's world around the world, right? Meaning like what a teacher's life is like, what a teacher's retirement is like. And one of the things that, I don't know why it keeps popping up, maybe because I talk to Bickle a lot, and Bickle's a teacher, right. You know, but there are so many things I keep seeing about, like, you know, I saw this one thing recently. It was a guy, I don't know where he was, might have been Ohio, but he was a teacher his whole life, you know, highly regarded teacher, you know, in the high school that he taught at. Everybody knew him in the community, you know, and long story short, you know, he talked about at a board meeting that was recorded and put on TikTok and YouTube and stuff that went viral. But he talked about how, you know, he's very proud of what he did in the education world and, you know, throughout his career because he was retiring. Right. But he said, I'm now going into retirement poor. Mm. And so what I love, not that you were in that position, right? But there's a lot of that around the country with these teachers and how when people love what they do and they want to teach, that it just doesn't financially make sense. And like, so I have friends, right, that are in that boat, right, that are like, hey, I can't be a teacher anymore. Like, I want to have a new car, right, or I want my kids to go to a good college, or, you know, whatever, right? Like the lifestyle they want to live is difficult. So the one thing when I heard that about you, because I've been hearing this lately, right, and you and I just recently connected again because of your business,
right,
which is so sick.
It's awesome.
But the first thing when Brian told me that you were starting a business, that like I kept hearing all this stuff, and I remember like, oh, Cintron, I'm like, good, like I'm so happy to hear that, because again, not that that's your position that you're in, but like it's just such a narrative right now, like so heavily in the teacher community. So we'll get into it later, obviously, but I'm so stoked though for that reason, number one, obviously, but number two, you know, there are a lot of goods and bads to owning a business. Way more goods than bads, right?
Right.
Or let's say goods and challenges, yeah, right? So, but the challenges, you know, don't even come close to how the goods are, right? And you're a natural leader. So to me, it was like made total sense. You know, one of the most successful insurance companies of all time, AIG, was led by a football coach. And the guy, Artie, who started it, was a football coach that literally, if you met him in a room, you know, he's still a leader now because he sold this company for billions. But he was a football coach that literally started an insurance company, you know, after his football career kind of like took a little side turn, mm-hmm, and then wanted to become a billionaire. And if you're in a room with him, you would never, this guy's not super smart. He's not somebody who knows about everything, right, about business. But he knew one fundamental thing about football. He said, if my players came in, he gave an example, and this was obviously in the heydays, in the 60s and 70s, when if you came in, you had a black eye. He goes, this kid got stung by a bee, and his head was swollen. So he said, coach, I can't practice today. He said to him, he's from the South. He goes, boy, if you want to be on this team, you squeeze that helmet on your head and you get out there.
That's the truth.
But that was his philosophy for business. He said, you know, we're going to do the hard work and we're not going to be pretty, but we're going to do it out there. We're going to show up every day. And I think ultimately that's what all these things came to my mind for you when I heard Cintron starting a business. I'm like, dude, this is that Artie guy, because he knows leadership. He knows tough work. He knows hardships. So nonetheless, what gave you the itch to say, I'm going to start a business?
You know, there's not a single answer to that, I think.
Okay. I wouldn't expect there to be.
Yeah. You know, I mean, so 20 years plus of teaching, 30 years of coaching, all sorts of experience. And I mean, the beauty of it is all the various relationships that I've developed over the years. And, you know, to the point where I've been invited to weddings and christenings and I'm hooking up with you, you know, 20 years after you were in my eighth grade class, which is just freaking crazy, man. And so proud of you and your success. So like, that's the beauty of it, right? That's awesome, those connections. One of the things I start to realize as I'm getting a little bit older, just turned 52 years old and retirement's coming, and I'm like, man, what is my next plan?
Yeah.
Like, and I'm very detail-oriented, I'm very plan-oriented, and I've heard a lot of the same types of things. Like, what am I going to do after I retire? And I don't look at retirement from education as not working.
Right.
And quite frankly, to your point as well, I'd have to work.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't make enough money. I don't have a bankroll where I could just retire.
And everything's so expensive too, though.
Oh, my goodness. I mean, you know, the exponential growth cost of products doesn't
house, mortgage, everything.
Yeah. And my income as a teacher is it's tiered.
Yeah.
Like, I don't have any say over improving my income.
You can't work harder or more hours to make more money.
I could be the best, I could be the worst. I'm making what I made.
Yeah, it is what it is.
And you know, I used to look at coaching, that pay was almost like a gift at the end of the year.
Right.
You know, I was like, oh, that's awesome. I got a couple extra $1,000. Because it was about those kids, those boys, those girls that I was coaching.
Yeah.
It was about helping a community, you know, because everybody rallies around sports, right?
Yes.
So I just started to recognize that I needed to do something to control my future.
Yeah.
Where my grind and grittiness is going to help me find success.
Yeah.
And I also started to look at it as a new way for me to apply what I believe are my leadership skills. Mm. You know, I see myself as a servant leader, right? You know, the idea of boosting other people up by building them up, by providing them with educational opportunities and leadership opportunities. And that's what I'm doing with my team right now. In a couple of weeks, we have our leadership team meeting scheduled. So we're going to talk about, you know, the opportunities for our staff members moving forward. So I'm only 6 months into it, and I have this vision of what we can look like in 5 years or 10 years.
Love it.
And I don't know what's going to happen, John.
So exciting.
But I'm going to bust my ass, and we're going to figure it out.
That's so exciting, and those are the right things to be thinking about, in my opinion, in my experience, is putting those big, they call them big, hairy, audacious goals on the table.
And hairy, audacious
goals. And I don't know why that's called that. All that's just a known thing in corporate training.
Audacious sounds about right, because if I say this to people, they're like, why do you think you can do that? And I'll be honest with you, I don't know why I think I could do it. I'm just going to do it.
Yeah, but that's what that guy Artie from AIG, the football coach, I'll reference him a lot today, but he says, you know, like before Nike really popularized Just Do It, because this speech, which I told you about before and I didn't ever send you, and I'm sorry, I'm going to send that to you.
Okay.
But he, at one of their conferences with his team, remember, so at one point, so he went from being somebody who made, I think, like $20,000 a year being a football coach to being a billionaire. And he was in a room full of his employees in this one conference, and I'm pretty sure there was like thousands of his employees in this one room on an annual conference. And he said, you know, the one thing when people ask him about his success is, I'm going to revert back to what you just said, but he said, you know, my one friend tells me they want to be, you know, the best beauty salon person in town. When he goes, well, just do it. You know, the other person wants to pay off their house. Just do it. You know, other person wants to do this. Just do it. Just do it. And the theme of that thing is called Just Do It. But the point is that I love, because what you're saying, in theory, when you look at all the successful people in business, charity, whatever, they just did it, right? Yeah. There wasn't, you don't have to have a plan. typically when you have the plan too much, or like if you're waiting for the right plan, you know, you miss the opportunity.
Right.
And I think I heard this a couple years back, but you know, the normal conventional saying is ready, aim, fire. Right? Because logically,
right,
be ready, aim, get a good shot out, and fire. Right. So you don't miss the target, right? But I heard somebody say, fuck that. Ready, fire, aim. Because every time I miss, I'll recalibrate and I'll get better and more accurate. And in theory, I won't let all these opportunities pass me by. Mm. Because how many opportunities pass people by because they're waiting for the pursuit of perfection? I have to have the money to do this. Yes. I have to have the right team to do this. Yes. I have to have the right car and the right signage and the right bar and the right whatever to do this. But did Steve Jobs have the right situation? He was in a garage. He was, you know, he wasn't wearing deodorant. He was a hippie. He smelled, right? But look at what he built, you know?
He did okay.
He's all right. Right? The most successful company in the planet, right? So ultimately, I love what you're saying because it speaks to the core fundamentals and characteristics of an entrepreneur, right? And that's a cool thing.
What you just said, like, that resonates with me.
Yeah.
So, like, to say I had a plan wouldn't be totally truthful.
Mm-hmm.
It was about this time last year where my head started to spin. I'm like, you know, I need to figure something out. Like,
right.
What is it I'm going to do? And I think the one thing that I do well is I make people feel comfortable.
Right.
You know, and I think when you can make people feel comfortable, they're more likely to have an enjoyable experience.
Totally.
So I started to think about, like, what is it that I can do?
Yeah.
To help me grow personally.
Right.
And also make people happy.
Right.
You know, and I know not everything's about making people happy, but guess what? It happens to be one of those things that I enjoy doing.
Yeah.
So I decided I'm going to dive into that. And bullshitting with a buddy, oddly enough, like the way the world works, you know, we kind of reconnected as well.
Right.
We're friends since we were 6 years old.
Yep.
We're friends through being, you know, up to our early adult years. And, you know, life got in the way. His name's Chuck Romer. He's a local guy.
Yeah.
Romer's Custom Carpentry.
Oh, cool.
You know, he builds beautiful homes all along the ocean, right here in Ocean and Monmouth counties. And we just hook up, and he says to me, Cintron, fuck it. Just do it.
Just go do it.
Just do it. I'm like, ah, man. He goes, just fucking do it. What are you waiting for? What's the worst case scenario? You lose $5,000, $10,000, $100,000? You just make it back.
Right.
Now, as a teacher, I'm like, well, that's a lot easier to say than,
yeah, you
know, than actually get it done.
Yeah.
But the point was, what are you waiting for?
Right.
And, you know, not only did he give me that push, he gave me support. He gave me some leadership and mentorship, which is really cool. He literally built me a custom bar, trying to help me along the way. You know, grateful for people like him, like you. I have other people in my life.
Yeah.
That have been, you know, crazy valuable in pushing me.
Yeah.
And ultimately, we kicked this off in the middle of the summer season last year.
Right.
Next thing you know, I'm busy every weekend.
Right.
I mean, again, you know, I'm not the most religious guy in the world, but boy, do I feel blessed.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah,
great fortune. Yeah. And, you know, I guess, you know, good fortune, you know, rewards the risk takers,
yes,
right?
Yeah.
So fortune, I hope I get to be one of them.
Fortune favors the bold.
There you
say.
Go.
That's what they say, right?
I've heard it.
And without taking risks, you can't get there.
No.
And so, with that said, I'm gonna be bouncing around a lot today because I'm giddy about today.
But it's a good time. I've been looking forward to it.
Yeah. So, you know, again, but for people out there who are watching too, I want them to understand though too that, so again, so you were my eighth grade teacher.
Yeah.
Right. And one of the things, so I was in classified classes, right? So I always talk about that. So I was in a classified class. You know, I remember I had Mrs. You know, C.
Yeah.
You know, at that time.
So this is a great story to include in her. Go ahead, John, because this is awesome.
Yeah, yeah. So now, at that time, you know, in my career, I had, in my education, I guess, career, collegiate career, I was very lazy as a student. I didn't apply myself, and I didn't understand how history or math or any of these things would have any sort of relevance to my life, right? And so I was lazy with it. The things I like and the things that I could put my hands on, like, that's how I learned. But school for me was like, I was like, well, this is a joke, like, in my mind, right? Mm-hmm. So I didn't take it seriously, and I remember the big tipping, there's two big tipping points for me, right, in my middle school, you know, education, right? Mm-hmm. One was, I'm sitting there, I was in Miss D'Agostino's class, and, you know, I get pulled out, and they tell me that I got kicked off the wrestling team, and at the time, I set the record at the school for track and field for high jump.
Yep.
And they were like, you're off both the teams because of your grades. And I was like, fuck, like, damn it, like, this
the
is so
one thing driving me right now.
I was like, I'd enjoy them. I was like, this is great, right? So long story short, you know, and also, well, I initially did track because I was playing football. I was playing Brick Youth.
Right.
I wasn't doing the Pop Warner, but I was doing Brick Youth, and I only did track initially because football. So luckily, it wasn't tied to the school, so I could still play football.
Yep.
But anyway, so we get kicked off these both things. Low point, my teacher pulls me aside, or my teacher aide pulls me aside with Miss D'Agostino, and is like, hey, you know, she says to me, I'm going to give you this vocational packet because you're not college material, and you're going into high school, and I think you should go right into vocational school, essentially.
Yep.
A vo-tech or whatever. So I'm like, damn, like she like must think I'm an idiot, or maybe I am an idiot, right? Like I was like so questioning it. And so anyway, long story short, I turned it around, right, from that point, because going into eighth grade at certain points, I believe in your class, I was always like CB, like area. And it went from being, you know, at that level of me having Fs in certain classes to getting to a C or a B to pass, right? So because that was in the beginning of the year that this stuff happened to me. And so at the end of the year, when I got more comfortable and like, ah, whatever, I'm sitting here in class. I'm in Cintron's class, right? And poor Matt Scala, right? I don't know where he is or what he's doing today.
That's a blast. Yeah.
I don't know what he's doing today.
Good kid,
shout out to Matt Scala.
Hey, what's up, bud?
But poor Matt Scala, I'm sitting there. And he had an afro at the time. I don't know if you remember. He had an afro.
He had a full head of hair.
So it's the end of the year. You know, everyone's signing yearbooks, doing whatever. And I think Cintron's like, you know, off his game for a second because he's signing yearbooks, right? And you're always so, and I think you still are, but you're always so vigilant, right? Like, you know, Kobe Bryant's called court vision. Like, you don't have to look to know what's going on.
Absolutely right.
So I'm sitting there, and this is Cintron. He's sitting there. He's signing yearbooks. He's talking to people at his desk. So his head's turned this way. I'm all over there. I'm not even in periphery view. So I'm like, I'm fucking golden. So I'm like sitting here. And I'm looking at Matt Scala, and he gives me the golden opportunity because he sees me cheating, and he goes, he's like, fuck. He's like, all right, whatever. So he kind of just moves his arm a little bit. So I'm over here looking like this. Boom, boom. I'm like almost done with the test, right? I'm about to be done because he just flipped his paper over to the backside. I'm hammering these things out. I'm like, all right, boom, boom. And then all of a sudden, as I'm about to write, I think I have like two more to go. I'm like filling this in. All of a sudden I hear, just when you think I'm not looking, Mr. Vigaro and Matt Scala, you know, and I'm sitting there, I instantly shit my pants. I'm like, fuck, he saw me. And you get up and you go, bring up your tests, right? So I bring up my test. Scala brings up, poor Scala brings up his test, and boom.
White as a ghost.
Right? Yeah. And Scala, by the way, so Matt Scala, sorry about that. but he did not, I mean, he let me cheat, so I guess he was a part of it. But, you know, he was a good kid. I mean, he had good grades, you know, great dude. So anyway, we get up there, boom, rip up the tests, throw them in the garbage, F's, right? And what I loved about it, and I always bring this up, and I think this is important for any teachers watching this, was I think what I love about you so much, and I use the word love intentionally, right? Yeah. So you were one of the teachers that like, because you, like you said, and I'll let you say this in your own words, but I wasn't a great student, right? But you were one of the teachers that I think about that was very intentional with like essentially teaching a lesson of like a negative sort, not like obviously like a like teaching, but so instead of you being like F, boom, that's crazy, why would you do that, done, like, you know, you're getting an F, like you actually pulled me aside, Matt aside, had a whole conversation with us, and we're like, guys, like, you know, come on, like, and you talked to us, you leveled with us, you know, and then you also eventually gave us an opportunity to get, you know, that a better grade, right? Without cheating. And I think I've been in scenarios where I've got caught cheating, right? And it was the complete opposite experience, where it was like, scolded, you're in the red scarlet now, you know, whatever,
right.
and you're in trouble, right? As opposed to like, why would you do that? You're better than that. Like, come on, like, I expect more from you, right? So. And I remember leaving the classroom that day and be like, damn, I disappointed him. I wasn't even, I don't know if I was more upset that I failed or that like you felt disappointed in me rather than pissed off at me. And I think that's the difference. And I think, again, going back to leadership and things like that, I think that's the challenge with most teachers. And I get it, it's tough. You're dealing with 90, 120, how many kids you deal with in a day or in a month? And so there's a lot. There's a lot of personalities, there's a lot of dynamics, parents probably get involved, obviously stuff. But it meant a lot to me that you did that. And so fast forward, you know, again, this was towards the end of the year. At the end of each year at that time, I don't know if they still do it, but they did like a writing competition.
Right, right.
And so throughout the year, you know, to finalize that year, because we were like in the closer to the end of it, I wrote about, you know, what I learned from you, right? And now, again, as somebody who is not a writer, even to this day, not a writer. Thank God for, you know, Apple having auto corrections and whatever. But I sat down and I said, you know, I wanna write about this because you taught me something, right? At a point where in school systems, I didn't think that, you know, I was learning much. I thought I was wasting my time in school, right? So I wrote this thing about how you taught me about, you know, the lesson and growing and how cheating is not the way, right? Because I was only hurting myself, right, by cheating. Long story short, I won second place.
Which was awesome.
Out of, I think there was close to like 100 plus submissions, right?
Should have been first. It was awesome.
Yeah. Well, and honestly, I thought I should have been first too. I'm just kidding. But I won second place. And I remember I brought it home. And I was like, oh my God, you won second place. That's crazy. It's so cool. And to this day, I showed you the article.
It still gets me.
Yeah.
Not a joke.
And going to the theme, like a lot of times on the podcast, I'll talk about how you have to find the right partner in life, like your wife or your husband. And my wife, when I had it at my mom's house on the fridge. It stayed in my mom's fridge forever, right? And so when I moved, my mom was like, oh, take it with you, whatever. So I took it and it was in a box. And I remember one day I come home and my wife, at the time, she worked at her family's company, and she laminated it. That's the one that you saw right? And she laminated it. She goes, you know, this is something, you know, that, you know, we should always just look at, because at that time where I didn't think that I was good enough academically, right? I won this award because it was inspired by you, right? And so she said to me, like, I think you should keep this only because one thing, it takes a person to believe in you. Mm-hmm. And then secondly, it takes you believing in yourself to achieve anything, right? And that's what that article did for me.
Yeah.
Because you believed in me, right? And it meant the world to me, right? At that time where I went into a place where I was like, wow, I'm an idiot. I'm going to vocational school and I'm not college material. Even though ultimately she wanted to be right because I didn't want to go to college, right? There's nothing wrong with that.
Nothing at all.
So nonetheless, you know, you've inspired me in so many ways, dude. I know we had that conversation briefly in my house. But, you know, and you said something that I remember you saying a couple of times in class where you're like, you know, you use the words like, I love you all. Or like, if you didn't hear it today, you know, boom, you know, I love you. And that's why I know you're going to be so successful in business the way that you have been academically. I don't know one student that I know that was in your classes that isn't like, I love that guy. Like, honestly, I don't know one.
I'd like that to be true. I don't know, but thank you for that.
Yeah.
Honestly, really, Johnny, all of those things that you're talking about are all based around developing relationships with people, right? You know, and if we didn't develop that relationship and I caught you cheating, you wouldn't have hung around class.
Right.
To allow me to have that conversation.
Totally, totally.
You know what I mean? And a lot of things get lost in the world of education. Well, I don't know if this is 100% accurate, but, you know, we focus so much on curriculum.
Yeah.
And really what we're doing is we're building adults, right?
Yeah.
I don't care the age level, right?
Yeah.
But all I want you to be is better today than you were yesterday a little bit. And if you fail on that, well, guess what? We got tomorrow to do
that. Yeah, we'll figure it out.
Right?
Yeah.
So if we're always looking at it like that and sharing the love, man, like you don't know what people are going through.
No.
You know?
No.
And so when I started saying that in class, I remember very clearly, you guys are going to think this is weird, but I love you.
Yeah.
And I'm going to tell you every day just to make sure somebody says it to you.
Yeah.
And I just think, it's a way to open the door to developing something.
Yeah.
You know, making yourself vulnerable.
Yeah.
How many people feel uncomfortable saying I love you?
A lot.
I know families that don't even use the words.
Yeah.
So, you know, for me, it was a way to be vulnerable and allow my students to be vulnerable whenever they were ready.
Right.
So, you know, hopefully I can take that and I can apply it to the business world.
Yeah.
I mean, that's certainly one of my goals. And by the way, Johnny also left out that we were the three.
I was getting there.
Okay. I'm sorry, jumping the shark on it, but we won a basketball championship. It was a good time.
Yeah.
So,
yep.
You know. But,
and I remember me and Brian Bickle, so how the trio came into play was me and Brian Bickle. I told Bickle, so Bickle goes, let's do the 3-on-3 thing. Cool. We were looking for somebody to bring on the team. Like, let's get Cintron. And I remember verbatim, he goes, he's a football guy. He's not going to play basketball. And I'm like, yeah, but dude, he's got a height like us. Like, we're all like 6'2" plus.
Yeah.
And I was like, and honestly, he'll just body people. And that's what ended up happening. That's what, dude, you were bodying Micah. You were bodying Cuts. Like, so long story short, you know, we I remember we came out of the gates and the first game we had was against the top seed team.
There were some dudes.
It was McMullen who went to play D1 at Colgate.
Yep.
It was Cody Cutter, who was a stud athlete.
Yep.
And then it was Micah, who was the basketball coach. And so these guys were like the Patrick Mahomes of like and the Tom Brady's of basketball
of
in our school.
At that time, yeah.
Yeah, and we crushed them. Crushed them.
Still remember.
Everybody was so disappointed. I remember leaving. I was on such a high that day. I remember leaving, and Bickle, we were just on a high. But anyway, we won, and it's such another memory that we have, which is so cool.
Yeah.
But anyway, let's shift gears here. So, you know, I want to go back to that whole, you know, education thing, right? So for because there's a gazillion teachers that I'm friends with, or people that listen to this that are teachers, for personal development, you know, reasons. If you were to go back, right, to the beginning of your education career, what would you do differently knowing what you know now? So picture yourself, you go in a time machine, you're going in Back to the Future like the movie, right? So you're Michael Fox for a second, and you go back, boom, the day before you start your first day, right? So you know tomorrow you're starting. You're in a time machine, you walk into that house, wherever you were living, whatever you were doing, right? What do you say to Michael Cintron 20 plus years ago?
Wow. That's a great one. All right. First thing is this. Take advice when it's given.
Yeah.
All right. So that's kind of broad-based. But, you know, so many times when we're young and growing, we're, you know, people tell us stuff, but you just kind of – you pick your path and you kind of go towards it.
Yeah.
And it's the information kind of hits you, bounce off, you take some of it. One of the pieces of advice that I was given right away was go get your master's degree now.
Yeah.
I should have done that at that time.
Okay. Why?
A couple of reasons. It would have increased my value over a longer period of time.
Okay.
Because you get an additional stipend for that master's
degree. Got it.
Also, it may have had me looking at leadership through a different lens sooner.
Okay.
You know, my leadership was really is like, okay, I'm in control of my classroom. I'm a coordinator, I'm a head coach, you know, those different things. Those are my leadership experiences. I would do professional development, but it really didn't have, there wasn't a focal point for it at the time.
Yeah.
I was just enjoying the opportunities that I was given.
Right.
So perhaps that would have had me looking through a different lens early on.
Did you want to get your master's?
No, not at first.
Okay. No, I'm saying in general, did you ever want to get it?
Oh, I did, yes.
Oh, you did? Okay.
Yeah. Okay. And, you know, and that was, that's one of those things like I'm super proud about because, you know, when I was a student, John, I wasn't a very good student.
Yeah.
And I had help as well on some of my papers.
Yep.
And I went away to college. I didn't know how to be a student.
Right.
The first time I went away, I screwed up. I left, you know, $30,000 in debt, whatever that was. My mom says, hey, Michael, you know, you're going to get a job and you're going to roll at OCC or you're going to find a new place to live. I believed her. So I did those things.
Yeah.
You know, I remember taking that first job for $3 an hour, going to OCC at night.
Wow.
You know, kind of grind those things out and run into my youth football coach, Coach Joe Morris.
Wow.
Who was your coach for Brick U football.
Yeah.
On a heavyweight level. And he had said, well, I don't know what you're doing, but you're not at school, so you're going to start coaching.
Yeah.
So grateful for him because he gave me direction
so
when
he got
I really
you in
needed
there.
It.
Got it.
Really needed
got it.
That. So, and then I wind up going back to school because one of my players says, well, hey, coach, why don't you teach?
Yeah.
And I'm like, why do you say it? He's like, I think you'd be a good teacher. Literally, I could still see that kid's face when he was saying it to me. So I took that very seriously. I went back to school. I learned how to be a student.
Yeah.
And I think I learned how to be a student in a sense that, well, it takes a lot. There's a lot of work that goes into it.
You
can actually read and write and study and that kind of thing.
Right.
But I now had a vision of helping kids that were like me.
Because
I didn't give a shit about school. I didn't really think anybody cared about me in school.
Right.
And that sounds ridiculous maybe to some people, and that's also a me thing, but here I am. You know, I was a starting quarterback. I was pretty good. Like, people knew me around school. I guess I had my you know, version of popularity and all that kind of stuff, but I didn't really feel valued.
Right.
And I think that's one reason why I wasn't a good student.
Yeah.
So when that young man said that to me on a football field, I was like, wow, if I can make that kid feel good here, why can't I do that in a classroom?
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
It does. It definitely does.
I think having that leadership background sooner, that like that formal education might have driven my direction a little sooner. The other thing I would have done is I would have started my business earlier.
Mm.
If I had done this when I was 30 years old.
Well, were you somebody who, throughout the years, though, like, did you, like, in the summer, did you have jobs in the summer? Like, do you bartend in the summer? Like, or were you just, because you coached and you did a lot of stuff.
Right.
So did you do anything else other than that throughout the years?
So before this? The answer is yes.
Okay.
You know, I mean, years ago down in Seaside, yeah. You know, before I was a teacher and stuff like that, you know, working down at Club Excess and whatever, the various, yeah. various places down there. Once I got into teaching, I became a three-sport coach very quickly.
Yeah.
And it made it hard to do a lot of different things. So I would kind of fill in. I would do catering. I would do bartending. I would pick up jobs.
Yeah.
You know, I would even work at restaurants because they would right. close earlier as opposed to clubs at 3 o'clock in the morning.
Right. I can't see you sitting fucking still.
I'm not good at it.
I couldn't see it.
Yeah.
Which is such a good entrepreneur characteristic. Sorry, continue. But
no,
I just, when I think about that, like, I could never see you in the summers be like, I'm just going to hang out and read a book all summer and just relax and hang out with my wife and my, you know, whatever. It's like, I just couldn't see you doing it.
Well, and that's the thing about coaching.
Yeah.
I don't know how to do it any other way. I don't really know how to do many things any other way than 100%. Like, so when I was coaching year round.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, even if I wasn't at practice, I'm working on a game plan, I'm drawing something up, how do we coach this up? What kind of new drills do we you know, implement in practice? And
right.
So it was hard to pick up any extra money.
Right.
Because I felt my responsibility were to those boys,
yeah,
their parents, the school, the yeah. community, everybody yeah. that's invested in what we're doing, and I took that responsibility very, very seriously. The downer of that is I didn't really take my personal growth, my opportunities anywhere else.
Got it.
You know, I explored becoming a head coach. I interviewed for it. I was offered an opportunity. Wound up not taking it because I wasn't too sure about
yeah.
it. But that was about it as far as a vision goes.
Yeah.
And as I got older, and, you know, I think a lot of people say this, and why I try to talk to my students, like you had said, I spoke with
yeah.
you, is, you know, what is it you're going to do next?
Right.
You know, you don't have to stop, but there's always a next. What is next? Next could be tomorrow.
Yeah.
It could be tonight. So I would have looked at that differently.
Yeah.
Man, I hope I answered that question.
Yeah. No, I think you did. One of the things that I just feel like you're such a great teacher is because you were a finance guy initially. You were in the mortgage space, right, initially?
Well,
out of the gates, I'm saying?
Like, no, out of the gates. Initially, I was in advertising sales and marketing.
Right. And then went into teaching and then back to mortgage?
And then got into mortgages. So, okay. like, my background, you know, from mucking stalls and paving roads, right,
yeah.
So I got into advertising. I actually sold Kirby vacuum cleaners door to door.
Love it.
And I sold it. So the owner of Showcase Publications knew he wanted one. So I sold him two.
Okay.
And he offered me a job. Mm. So I had to wait 2 months for the opportunity to arise. So I'd call him every 2 weeks. And
yeah.
the next thing you know, I was working for him. It was a fantastic gig. It was
yeah.
great.
Yeah.
It was great. Did very well. Actually did better than that than education until recently.
Okay.
And then I turned that sales experience into selling real estate, which was awesome. You know, again, my sales experience,
yeah.
which is what I see my business as, me connecting with people,
right.
and teaching them about the different things that they could provide in terms yeah. of entertainment at their homes or different venues, right? But so I took advertising, went to real estate, and then I took the real estate to mortgage industry.
Mm.
And recently, those people that are paying attention to this podcast are probably aware of this. You know, we had mortgage rates dropping down to 3 and sub, which is fantastic.
Dude.
Putting people in homes
yeah.
for 2.75 was incredible. And then, of course, then interest rate, when the Fed touched it, you know, and they jumped up to 6-8%, and, you know, kind of made some changes. So I decided I need to make a shift.
Yeah.
You know, I also had some health issues going on. So, you know, those stressors and leaving those behind for a little bit. And then I was quiet for a little while, John.
Yeah.
All I did was teach. And I found I was fucking bored.
Yeah.
Excuse my language. I don't normally curse much. But
that's okay.
Nonetheless, it's the truth, right?
Yeah.
I was fucking bored. And I was looking for something to do.
So that's my point. So getting back to like leadership training, and like, I feel like people who are disruptors in a space are ones who initially didn't set out to be in the space. Like, you didn't go to college because you were like, you didn't wake up and like, I want to be a teacher.
Right.
You were in ads, you were in mortgage, you know, yep. you were more, I wanted to be a business guy.
Yeah.
Right. And then you just fell into being a teacher, and then all of a sudden became this great leader and were awesome at being a teacher. And I think it's because when you, some people look at teaching very narrow-minded, right? Where I never saw you as narrow-minded, but I think it should be required, right? And I'm gonna throw this out there to whoever runs the school boards for America. or the whatever standards. But I think leadership training should be required, like to the highest level, right, of leadership training. I've had some teachers over the years that were some real fucking pricks, like real fucking pricks. And
there's all sorts of people out there, that's for sure.
Dude, but you know, and that's the thing. So like, I look at it like, you know, I remember growing up, like, you know, you always look at adults, right? Like growing up, if I see a teacher, like when I was like in first grade,
right,
it's like teachers were like, you know, like, oh my God, like they're like the chosen ones of society in my mind at the time, because it's like, you know, they're teaching you, they're in charge of you. You can be in trouble by them. Like there's such
a role of control that is there.
Right, right. So over the years, it's like, wow, I fear these people. And like, I respect these people. And I was always raised to like, respect your elders and stuff. And I still do that to this day. But over the years, man, it's like, you know, you start to see it and, you know, you meet, like, it's almost like that saying, you meet your heroes, you'll be disappointed, right? Mm-hmm. Because at the end of the day, everyone's just people. Life is messy, right? And there was a specific teacher that I had in high school, right? And I'll never forget it. I might name drop, I might not, I don't know. I'll say how I'm feeling about it. But, you know, I'm in high school and this guy, I'm pretty sure it was social studies as well as history or whatever. But this guy was always a ball buster and I was a ball buster and everyone in the class was. And I remember one day, because he had the ability, he had a range where he could either joke around and he's busting your chops and everyone's laughing at him, or he can kind of be a dick and like really say something that be a little hurtful. I remember one day I'm in class, I'm sitting there and literally out of absolute nowhere, he just goes to me and he goes, Figaro, you know, he goes, I might have provoked him. I don't know. I can't remember. But it's very possible I did. So I want to just be completely transparent about that. But I think we were busting balls or whatever. And, you know, he goes, your ears are going to hold you back from many opportunities in your life because they're so big in front of a whole classroom, right? So everyone starts cracking up and I feel super embarrassed. I'm like, damn, because that was always, when I was growing up, that was always my insecurity. So I was like, damn, like that was embarrassing, right? So I felt super embarrassed and I remember firing in the back and whatever. And long story short, like I wound up hearing years, I wound up seeing this guy years later, right? At Jenks of all places. And
that's where a lot of people bump into people.
Yeah. Go ahead, right? So I'm at Jenks and you know, and I walk up to him and I start talking to him and he's like, you know, what have you been up to, whatever. And I told him I started a business and blah, whatever. And I wound up hearing years later that this guy wound up getting fired and had all these crazy issues like throughout Brick and Mortar High School. And I was like, damn, like that's crazy. And so throughout the time, I forgot about him until I saw him in that moment. I wanted to punch him in the face for a second. I'm like, you know what? At the end of the day, like, you know, I don't, like, those things happen for a reason. I don't know why, you know, because like, I guess insecurities, whatever. But it's things like that, right, where like, a teacher should never say something like that to a student, right? But ultimately, right, like it gave me tougher skin. So like I look back when I saw him and I don't want any ill will towards anybody.
Right.
But it's like, you know, it's like things like that, right? That are like, you know, but they're just people and life is messy. So, you know, I look back now and I think about it differently, but I've heard horror stories that make mine look like a dream, right, of teachers.
Yeah.
So it's like, dude, like what the, like what's going on out there?
But you know, I think sometimes, and I'm sure I'm guilty of this, and I may have done that, John.
Yeah.
Like I could have been that teacher. I don't know. Sometimes perhaps we try a little too hard to make a connection,
yeah,
to provide a little levity and humor in class.
Yeah.
And sometimes we reach too far, you know?
Yeah.
So not to defend that teacher.
No, right. And like I said, I
so when I hear, sometimes I hear things about what goes on in classrooms around the country, I'm like, no, there's no way. There's no way.
Like, how could that be possible? Right.
It's just, no. But it's messy. It's messy. And that person might have just tried a little too freaking hard that day.
Right.
I don't know.
But my only piece of advice, though, for teachers out there, because obviously we all have our shit days, right?
Mm.
Like, and we're people, right? And a lot of us are whether you're parents or you have something going on in your life, for your family, you know, it's really important to have, in adapting social, we have this thing called a TP. And a TP is somebody who's like, it's called your training partner, but they're like your best friend at work, right? Mm. And so like when you're having a shit day, like you have somebody to flag it up to, right? So you don't just come in hot and heavy. And then if you explode, nobody knows, like, oh yeah, you know what? Mike was having a tough day. and also can talk you off a ledge or be there to like talk to and confide in and certain things. But I think teachers need TPs that are not a professional TP. I mean, like, go talk to the principal, right? Like, because they're judging you. They're looking at every aspect. TP is not there to judge. A TP is there just to listen and to be there for, you know, to offer some advice or just to be there, like I said, just to be a soundboard.
That what you're identifying to me is servant leadership.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, that's what it is. It's like that ability to make a connection with somebody. So whether it's a superior,
or
just a partner,
right?
But there's still examples of it.
Yeah, but most people though, like that. This was created because there's a bigger organization, that's our client that like trains and teaches leadership to like the Royal British Army, mm-hmm. To the U.S. Army, the Marines, like the biggest companies in America, and they teach like leadership through and through, psychology, everything, to the highest level and the highest leaders in the country. And they taught us this because psychologically, like if you're having a shit day, most often you're not going to your boss, because
probably not.
At the end of the day, 90% of the world that works at a place doesn't want to be judged by their boss or doesn't want their boss to see them feeling weak or have weak mm-hmm. moments. So when you have a TP, right, you can confide or whatever. But anyway, my point is that I feel like with teachers, they should have that. Because, you know, sometimes you, like, people need to, like, be able to watch out for you, too. You know, if you have a shit day. I've seen crazy things online where, you know, and teachers these days are being provoked, I think, more than ever. Right? In crazy ways. I saw something on TikTok where a teacher got punched in the face by a student and was being consistently provoked by a student, like, in their face, like, yelling at them, screaming at them about something.
Right.
And it's like, you know, if that teacher was having a bad morning and stepped into something like that, they're not going to react the best.
Well, it could go horribly wrong.
Right.
Yeah.
So anyway, long story short, I guess what I'm saying is I think that teachers should have leadership training the way that somebody who, you know, should have mental evaluations for carrying a gun in carry states, mm-hmm. right? Teachers should have that same thing, because they, like, some of the most traumatic things, like, out of like the hundreds of people I've interviewed, there's typically three topics that get brought up about trauma. One is family, mm-hmm. second is domestically, mm-hmm. and third is influences or negative influences in school. And a lot of times it's a negative influence or a positive, right? But mainly negative from a teacher, mm-hmm. right? I had this one teacher who did X, or they, you know, they were just constantly my ass, or, you know, they, you know, made me feel like shit, or they, whatever, right? And so, like, when you think about it historically, kids think about those three things for the rest of their lives, and school plays a part in it, right? So I just think it's such an important thing that I don't know how, like, education doesn't have leadership training in it, because they are leading people and you know, future adults.
Yeah, yeah. You know, I can tell you, like, that there are professional days where there are, you know, various opportunities to, you know, expand on what you're, you know, you're doing as a teacher. I think the training is key, as opposed to kind of introduce an idea.
Yeah.
You know, because training suggests something that's continued.
Yeah, right. It's an ongoing thing.
You know, and I can tell you, I know, I personally, I tried to do that, the school that I was at prior to I'm at now.
Yeah.
You know, we introduced that. We started to introduce a professional library.
Yeah.
So, like, you had the talent code out there. I was telling you about
that before.
So I could totally geek out on that.
Yeah.
But what a fantastic book. Dan Coyle writes about, you know, how we become awesome at what it is we do. I digress. But nonetheless, that's an example of one of the books that we added to our professional library.
Right.
And the idea, and I did a presentation on it, and that was to motivate people to read and kind of investigate, you know, what is it that goes into teaching? And a lot of teaching really is leadership.
Yeah.
Because you're the leader of your classroom.
Right.
Right? And those, you got 10, 20, 30 faces looking at you at any given time.
Right, right.
So there are all opportunities of leadership. And, you know, like, kind of what happened with you with that example of cheating. You know, they're teachable moments.
Yeah.
And I think when we're in tune with concepts of leadership, we take that as an opportunity to teach, this is what we should consider doing next time.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, I think that's leadership.
Yeah.
So I agree. I don't know where that fits into the school year because, man, are we jam-packed? And, you know, the way that the education system works is, like, we're always adding information to the curriculum that needs to be taught.
Yeah.
And sadly, you know, that could have a negative impact on this type of thing.
Yeah.
You know, like, that we've developed.
Totally.
So I think it's a great idea. I just know where it fits.
I know. I think in order to get an education degree at a college, I'm saying, I feel like a requirement should be ongoing ed. But anyway, moving out of education, you know, What is stopping you today? Everybody has something. What is stopping you today from living your dream life?
Well, it's a terrible answer, but
no, there's no terrible answers.
But money, you know, because I know money's not supposed to make us happy.
Yeah,
and I don't know that money necessarily is a difference in my happiness or not.
Yeah,
but if we're going to talk about my dream life,
yeah,
that means I have more opportunities.
Right.
So I think that's the, you know, that's the difference.
Right.
You know, when you see people of wealth.
Yeah. Yeah.
There is a distinct difference in their opportunities.
Right.
So, you know, as a teacher, sometimes I'm like, golly, I put a lot of time and effort and love into what I'm doing. And every one of my students, like I teach AP US history. I got some very, very bright students. They're all smarter than me.
Right.
My job is to help them be better students.
Right.
Right. But they're all going to wind up making twice my income in year one.
Yeah.
Most likely, right?
Yeah.
So those opportunities, you know, money is the difference in the opportunities for me personally.
Yeah. So what would you do differently if you had the money?
Well, I'd be able to, you know, probably grow my business in a different way.
Yeah.
And, you know, perhaps we'll talk about that later.
But let's just say your business is already at that place where it's freaking crushing. It's a juggernaut.
It's a juggernaut.
What makes all the difference between then and now?
Yeah, I might take a vacation.
Okay.
I'll just tell you that. Like, you know, recently we went to a family wedding down in Isla Mirada.
That's nice.
Yeah, it's awesome. It was the first, my nephew's 17 years old.
Yeah.
And the year before he was born, I was in Rincon. I haven't been on a vacation since.
Wow.
So, you know, so that's something of value. That would enhance my life because I'm not good at turning off.
Mm.
So you can put me on vacation.
But why haven't you been on vacation that long? I'm just curious.
Well, for the longest time, coaching three sports.
Yep.
So that was a big part of it. And towards the end of my coaching career, I was working on my master's, right?
Yeah.
So time was just filled.
Boom.
Quite frankly, there's no extra money.
Right.
You know, or like, I don't really like to be in debt. I'm kind of just, it makes me uncomfortable.
Yeah.
So the idea of putting it on your credit card to worry about it later, I struggle with that.
Well, you're smart to struggle with that because it's not a good thing to be.
It's not. But at the same time, would that help relieve some of my stressors?
Hmm.
I don't know.
Yeah.
You know, certainly, you know, I live in a tiny little house and it'd be nice to have a larger house. But I'm honestly, Johnny, like, I'm that simple. I don't need a lot.
Yeah.
You know, so when we're talking about people of great wealth, I don't even need their money. Would I like it? Absolutely. Who wouldn't?
Yeah.
I wouldn't mind a piece of it.
Right.
You know, because I think that would provide me with greater opportunities.
Right.
Perhaps I could take my family on vacation.
Yeah.
Perhaps I could be more involved in some charities and donate money.
Right.
Maybe I can give back in different ways. I think that's really it. You know, like what's the difference? You know, I think financially that's the big one. And that's why this business is so important to me.
Yeah.
I don't know. Right. Again, I don't know what's going to happen with this.
Yeah.
But I'm gonna go down swinging, or I'm gonna rise swinging. You know, at the same time.
Either way, you're swinging,
and we're gonna figure it out. We're gonna figure it out from there.
You know, listen. One thing I just want to say, I don't think that anybody listening to this, and anybody in general, I always teach my kids this: nobody should ever feel bad about wanting to make money. People's relationship with money, what I've learned, right? I went from being in a financial position with my family where we almost lost a house. That's why I started Adapting Social. You know, I only started it like in high school. And dove into this because out of desperation purely. I was like, how can I help my parents not lose this house with five kids in it?
Mm.
Now, growing up, I was always the guy where my friends, I'm going to Six Flags. Mom, Dad, can I go? Don't have the money.
Right.
Can't go.
Right.
So either my friends' parents would spot me or my friends would spot me. Yeah. I was always that guy.
You get that help.
I was always that guy.
I was that kid growing up too.
And I hated that, right?
Yeah.
But that was my circumstance. And even to date, so many people have such a weird relationship with money because they think about it like it's a negative thing. It's weird to talk about. And the people, what I've learned though, ultimately is, you know, money is not a weird thing. If I were to say to you right now, right, would you like more oxygen? Because it's proven that oxygen in your body, right, at times, this guy Gary Brecka, I don't know if you've ever heard of him, but this guy Gary Brecka shares that when oxygen is present, right, even at elevated levels, so I hear some sort of breath work and doing more meditative stuff, that disease cannot live and exist when there's more oxygen. So if I said to you today, hey, do you want more oxygen? it'd be weird if you said no, right? Or if you, do you want to do breath work so we can like live
say,
longer?
Why not? Yeah.
Right, let's live longer. Yeah. That's why you stopped eating certain foods.
Absolutely right.
Right, and you look great, by the way.
Thank you. I appreciate
you really
that.
Do. And so ultimately, with financial, right? Like it's always a weird thing where people feel like, well, I don't want to be greedy, so I don't want to say like money's the thing.
Right.
But at the end of the day, right, money is like oxygen in a way, because if right now, if middle through your career, nobody would hire you, you got fired, you had bad references, and you couldn't work,
right,
what would you do? You'd be homeless, right?
That's the reality of it.
It's the reality of it, right? So we need money, right? But it's just a relationship with money. And I think the good thing that I've realized as I built my company, right, mm-hmm. and went from never having money to building my own wealth, is that my relationship with money changed so significantly, because it wasn't about, well, you know, I feel weird about this and this, whatever. I'm a big believer in setting intentions. And again, like, you know, we shared when we got some cocktails that one night, you know, I am religious, right? And I do believe in God. And so, you know, I pray on these things, I think about these things. And I know that at the end of the day, like, money has to do X for me. And a lot of times, like, as I've helped and mentored my own friends and family and people in business for their financials or their business, I'll sit there and I'll be like, you know, all right, boom, let's talk about one thing first.
Right.
A business and our careers are designed to do one thing, right? It's different from when your parents were growing up and my parents were growing up and our grandparents were growing up. They had to work these crazy jobs. It was never about happiness. Happiness wasn't even included in it.
Sure.
It was, I had to get to work, I have to provide, and that's my role as a man.
Right.
Right? I'm saying from our perspective.
Yeah.
So, but now we have careers and starting businesses especially to help us live a lifestyle we want to live. Right? That's why people do it. Sure. And I remember Tony Robbins taught me that at one of his Unleash the Power Within events, where he said, who in this room started a business because they wanted to live a certain way? And most of the room didn't raise their hands because they didn't think about it that way. And he said, you're supposed to start a business because the business is supposed to fuel your lifestyle, not so you can serve the business. Because a business and your career can be a vacuum of your time. It's gonna suck it all up. It's gonna, again, like you being never being on vacation or doing it. I did not as long as you, but I for 10 years did not do anything other than build Adapting Social.
Right.
Didn't go to birthday parties, missed this, missed that. I was nowhere.
Yep.
Right. I was just doing this. And I don't regret it looking back, because you know, I really needed that grind and those hardships to be who I am. But when I look back on what I look at, you know, money for the tool to me to do different things, right? I started to say to myself, well, you know, okay, well, you know, like right now as an example, right? And I asked this, we probably had maybe 5 or 10 teachers on this podcast over the years.
Okay.
Different collegiate, whatever. Do you put, so for instance, like as an example, right? I don't mean to put you on the spot.
Sure.
But do you put any amount of your own income into like any sort of retirement savings? And when I say retirement savings, I mean like, you know, S&P 500 or bonds or any,
no.
Like yourself. Right.
And the answer is no. I looked at it like this. If I can, and again, financial advisors, you know,
yeah.
I had some bad experiences with financial advisors.
Well financial, and I don't want to shit on all of them, right? But in most cases, right, like I let go of all of mine once I understood how money works.
And that's smart.
Yeah.
Because I can tell you 2 times in my adult life, mm-hmm. I had bad experiences with them.
Yeah. So. Well, typically, even if they say they take 1%,
mm-hmm.
right? So, and these are the conversations that I have with these teachers in the podcast. Because I ask this question, I go, what are you putting in to your, so what are your investing strategies? I'll ask them, right? So I'll ask you, do you have any investment strategies right now?
Yep. My home has been my investment strategy.
Okay.
And living with no debt.
Right.
I mean, quite frankly, that's where I've been.
Yeah.
The idea of
When you say your home is your investment strategy, what does that mean?
So my vision has been
yeah.
Up to this point
yeah.
to retire with no debt.
Okay. Got it.
So if I can retire with no debt,
yeah.
I'll be able to live a pretty nice life.
Yes.
You know, I'm not gonna be wealthy, but you know, I could be happy.
That's a great strategy, right? But that's not an investment strategy.
Correct.
Right? So, and by the way, that's amazing that when you get there, you'll have no debt. That's huge,
yeah.
right? Most teachers are not doing that, right? But most teachers are not investing, right? As an example. So even if they're like, hey, I'm not making a ton of money, right? They're not like, hey, 5% of my finances that I'm bringing in gross on a monthly level, no matter what, like as if it was taxes, I'm putting into this Vanguard account, which is a conservative account
mm-hmm.
that over time is going to compound and I can't touch it, right? Eventually, this is going to whatever. The point is that you know, when I started to look at those numbers and what I was paying a financial advisor, because it seems so minuscule. It's 1%, right? It's only 1%. Right. Do you know that? So the example that I was given by another person who's in a, if they're a fiduciary advisor, that means that they're legally
responsible,
right? They're not just a right, you know, they can't just tell you go invest in this.
Correct.
It's all by the book. So
it's not always by the book.
Right. That's right. You want it to be, but which is why I recommend Vanguard, like a 2065, right? Mm-hmm. But the point is, so when I reached out to Vanguard by one of my mentors who's worth like close to $80 million, mm-hmm. he said to me, he goes, "Do you have a financial advisor?" I was like, "Yeah, of course I do." He goes, "All right, get all of your statements. Come to my house. We're gonna look at how much you know you've lost." I'm like, "What?" Mm. So I'm still young, right? I started the business when I was like 17, 18.
Right.
You know, I'm going to be 32 this year. I'm sorry, no, I'm fucking 32 right now. I'm going to be 33 this year. And you know, and at the time, I think I was like 28. So let's just say 18 to 28, right? So 10 years. So at that point in time, right, alone, right, I've already invested close to, I think I lost close to like 40, 50 grand. Mm-hmm. That went to the financial advisor, right? And I'm like, what the hell? He's like, and he goes, I'll give you better math. He goes, if you were to invest, you know, and make, let's just say, for easy example, if you're gonna make $1 million, right, in your retirement, mm-hmm. right, or in these investments you're mm-hmm. making, you know, at $280,000+ over the course of your lifespan in investing is gonna go to an FA. Because it's 1% every year, mm-hmm. right? And then what else, who knows what else goes on. So, but anyway, my whole point is that so when I started to look at money like that, that's what, if I would go back into a time machine, even when I was making shit money right. back in the day, I would have put away that 5% into it every single month, no matter what, because by this point in time, it would be exponential, right? Even to date. So I think the difference for me is like the I don't look at money as like a weird thing anymore, right? Like, and I have conversations like, I don't want to be greedy. You should be greedy. You work hard, and teachers should be paid more.
Establish your value, and you should push for that value.
Yeah. Like you're not wanting to have money so you could swim in a pool with money in it, right? But like you want to do things, and I think going on vacation. But where would you go on vacation? So boom, you're balling. What would you and Heather go? Where would you go? Do you have a place in mind already?
No.
Right.
I haven't been able to think of it. I mean, honestly, that's the truth.
So I think that's the thing, right?
Yeah.
The number one thing I think for every business that Tony Robbins taught me was two things. Know your dream lifestyle that this business can produce so you mm-hmm. know what you're fighting for. And then secondly, be specific about it. Because there were so many times where, you know, it was funny. We're sitting there in a stadium of 12,000 people. And he'd go up to people, call them out and be like, you know, what do you want to do? This year, it was 2018. He's like, what do you want to do in 2019? And this guy's like on the mic, he goes, I want to make way more money. So the guy goes, so if you made 10 grand, would you be happy? He's like, no. He's like, well, what the fuck is way more money? Get specific.
Yes.
Right? Don't ever be general. So anyway, long story short.
So it's an actionable goal.
Yeah. Yeah, with a plan. Yeah. And I'll just say this real quick for people listening in. I've been doing this since UPW. But Tony Robbins, and he teaches this to fucking the high sports players, presidents, everything, is his philosophy and method of goal planning is as follows. What is the goal? Secondly, why do you achieving this goal, or what does you achieving this goal have an impact on your life and how? Thirdly, by when? When are you going to achieve it by? And lastly, how would it impact your life if you didn't? And so every goal you make, you have to have that four-step approach to. And he shares that you have to have it in locations in your home where you're constant, it's just looking you in the face every day. And so like, you know, for me, I have it literally next to my mirror in my bathroom. So when I'm brushing my teeth every morning, boom, looking at that thing. It's in my closet, I'm getting changed and picking out my clothes. Boom, I'm looking at that thing. And it's transformed, and it's crazy how powerful our subconscious mind is. Mm. When you're constantly fueling that thing, and you're looking at these things, and you're looking at these goals, and you're talking about it, and you're breathing it, they just start to happen because you're doing the work, because you keep seeing it. You can't, you know, if you're that person, you're a move maker, so obviously you're gonna do it. But for people out there that are not, it's for those types of people, right? And even though I have lazy fucking days too, like I have days where I'm like, I don't wanna.
You're human,
yeah,
of course.
Exactly. But So where do you see, you know, CCC going?
Oh boy, you know, so I'm looking at this upcoming season is being busier.
Yeah.
Than we were last season. And I think that kind of makes some logical sense. And because we started midway through the year last year. So, you know, going from 18 events last year in 6 months to...
Is that 23 was your first year fully?
Yep.
So to 18 events, it's amazing. Your first year?
Yeah, I feel pretty proud.
That's awesome.
Yeah, pretty happy.
And that's no marketing or advertising. That's just your network and word people referring mouth. And doing the right thing.
Yeah. I mean, talking it up a lot, trying social media, and hopefully I'm getting better at it. You're crushing it. You know, and of course, you know, working with adapting and that's going to help me move into the future. But yeah, there's a lot of talk about it, and you know, I feel fortunate to have a good circle of influence.
Yeah.
And you know, those people also speak about it, and the word gets out. But
yeah.
You know, if I can go from 18 to 36, I mean, that's a successful year.
Yeah.
Because that means I'm at least matching what I did in the second half and adding 18 more events to it.
Right.
So that'd be wonderful. Quite frankly, it's not the number of events that I'm interested in.
Right.
It's the quality of the events.
Yeah.
So if I do less events,
yeah.
fewer events, but they're better.
Yeah.
Right? I'm bringing more to the table. I'm having better conversations with my clients.
Yeah.
You know, there's a clearer vision
yeah.
of what they want their event to look like.
Yeah.
Because I wasn't having those detailed conversations.
Right.
Early on.
Yeah.
And Johnny, quite frankly, I mean, I think you might have been one of the first people that I was having more of those serious conversations yeah.
right.
with. And so the past 2 months, 2.5 months has been a lot of reflection and working on growth. And right. how am I going to improve the conversations that I have with my clients
yeah.
so that their event is memorable?
Totally.
So as much as I just said 36 events, but if I do 36 events next year, that's awesome.
Yeah.
As long as they're better than they were the year before.
I love it.
Same type of thing that I talk with my kids about. Let's be better today than we
yes.
were yesterday.
Yes.
You know, this year better than last year. So that's the desire for this upcoming year. I'm building a team, be able to work, I'll call it independently, from what it is that we're doing now.
Yeah.
So right now I have to be on site all the time.
Yeah.
You know, I really want to develop a team that can take an event and run with it.
Yes.
Based upon the leadership program that we're working on developing.
Yeah.
So that's a goal moving forward. And hell, I want to get out of Ocean and Monmouth County and be able to take St. John's Coastal Catering and take it to another level.
New Jersey, everywhere.
Yeah.
So one thing I'll say on that though too, and this is just I guess advice
yeah.
from my perspective, right? One of the things that I looked at because I can only give my experience.
Absolutely.
When I started AS, I was doing everything under the sun, like for pretty much nothing and free, right? Get my name out there, right?
Yes.
And a lot of those jobs, I think I told you this last time we met up, but a lot of those jobs led me to the big ones.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess the fear of the mindset that you said that I have is that we're looking for these whales or these nicer events. And we bypass, not that you said that, but just throwing it out there, that you bypass this little 5-10 person event that could have a whale there that's like, this guy's fucking great. These places are
yes.
awesome. Because from my experience over the past few years, those have been what helped us leapfrog. You know, the more, it's a popularity contest. The more people know what you're doing, the better. The more that your team is serving drinks at different places, the better. Not the quality, but the volume. Because the quality comes with the volume.
Mm.
And the good thing to you guys, to your credit and your team's credit, what was the lady's name, Kelly, that was at with you at my place?
Angela.
I'm sorry, Angela.
Awesome rock
yeah.
star. Yes.
Rock star, right? Jacqueline was so against us having you bring the help.
Yeah.
Because she's like, no, I got it, right? But I'm like, Jack, you're pregnant. Let's like give our moms a break. But dude, she was like, we need the Angela every time we do it.
Right.
Now, because you're our guy now, right? So
right.
every time we have our parties now, which by the way, before you leave, I want to book a couple things.
Okay.
But, you know, it's like, those types of things like don't like exist unless you're at a volume game. And that was what one of my mentors told me too, which he was like, you know, the best, he was the best, because I met him through a smaller guy.
Right.
And he goes, the best thing you've ever done was you kept getting yourself out there. Because he goes, in business is not always about quality is about opportunity. So if you're in front of a million people, right, and at these building websites you don't want to build, you know, people are going to see it and be like, who built that? And that's where opportunity meets quality and meets growth and scale.
So it, like everything you said, like Cintron's Coastal Catering, really, and I know we're, you know, about wrapping this up, but you know, there, I look at it like this, you know, there's no fish too big or too small.
Yeah.
And it is. It's about getting at-bats.
Totally.
If you don't get an at-bat, you don't get the base hit.
100%.
And then if you don't get an at-bat, you don't get the double, triple, the home run, the grand slams, right? All those different types of things.
Yeah.
So I 100% agree with the volume, right? I don't say no to jobs.
Yeah.
Unless there's a reason to say no to the job.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
But I'm not going to say, certainly not going to say no to any conversation.
Good.
When I'm referring to the better is, I don't have to do more jobs to make myself happy or make greater income.
Yeah.
Right? But to your point, the more jobs I do, myself and my team are
popularity,
going to get better.
Awareness.
We're making more connections.
Right.
And it's all about the experience.
100.
So that's what I'm talking about better. Like if I did an event for you last year and you gave me 4 stars, hell, I want 4.5. I want 5 stars next time.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And what we're doing to be better now is stuff that we weren't doing before. For example, post-event surveys.
Right.
Didn't do it before.
Right.
So now we're doing those types of things. But yeah, volume, I'll work every weekend if I can, every night. If that's what it takes to be better.
To build a name.
To build my name, to continue that brand growth, and to make people happy. Yeah. Cintron's Coastal Catering is going to win no matter what.
Yeah.
And then, you know, the rewards will come later.
Yeah, I agree.
Whenever that is.
Yeah, I agree. I also, the last thing I'll say too, I really thought about this, and I know obviously every business owner's goal is to like let it operate and do its thing and build that trust. I'm a big believer. I think that like for, you already kind of did it, I guess, in year one, but one of the things that people talked most about at my event was Angela was great, but was like Cintron's the man, right? Which is tough, obviously, because the ultimate goal is to scale and let your team take over that thing.
Yeah,
it's important that that in the beginning that you're developed as the face, because you're the face.
Yes,
you know, because CCC is awesome, and once it's well known, like again, like for me, the first few years, if something was going great, I would get called by the clients. If something wasn't going great, I'd get called by the clients.
Sure.
And there was like, I got to talk. I only worked with you guys because John's there. Right? And that's why people are working with you, because you're there. And that's the one thing I would just say is like, you're the rock star of the show right now.
Right.
Right. It won't be that way for a long time. But as long as your face is there on site in the beginning while you're growing and building it, I think it's going to take off.
That's a good point. And I'm certainly not trying to release the reins too soon.
Yeah. Yeah.
I want to develop.
Totally.
And because I want it to be developed.
Yeah.
You know, at any point in anything that we're doing, I want to be developed. So if I can help my team develop and get into a position of leadership, whether we do that or not, it's another story.
Yeah. Well, no, you will. You will. Listen, you're just going to do it, right? You're just going to do it.
I don't have a choice.
And I wanted to say that because, again, I think it's important. Like, you know, again, I can, you know, I consider you like family, you know, based on our history.
Yeah.
And we're making big moves in the future together, current, present, future. And so anything for me, I'm a big believer in transparent communication and having the difficult conversations. But I think those are things that are going to just leapfrog you. Even if like you do like on-sites, like for me, obviously, I don't care. Like if you're at my stuff or not, I would rather you not be at mine because I already know you, you're good. But for people who like, oh, I was referred to you by somebody at Brick Memorial, like even if you're not working the events, you stop by them.
Have to.
You're like the mayor for a second. Hey, how you doing? How's everything going?
Have to.
Boom, boom, couple cocktails, and I'm out. It's like those are things I think in the beginning are so important.
Yes.
You know?
I agree.
But anyway, dude, this has been amazing. I'm so grateful for you taking the time to be here today.
Yeah.
I'm excited for our work together moving forward. Where can people find CCC? This is where you plug yourself. So Instagram, obviously website's coming soon. We're about to crush this. We're crushing that. But for now, give us Facebook, tags, Instagram. Where can they find you right now? And how can they call you? Give numbers, everything.
All right. So I'm Michael Cintron, right? Cintron's Coastal Catering. You can check us out on Facebook, Michael Cintron. On Facebook, Instagram, of course, we have our business Facebook, Cintron's Coastal Catering. There you can reach out to us there. You can always give me a phone call or a text message, 732-779-0870, 732-779-0870. Cintron's Coastal Catering @gmail.com. You can shoot me an email. And, of course, Adapting is working on building and constructing our website. I'm beyond stoked. Like, I can't wait. I can't freaking wait. That's going to be awesome. People have been asking about it, talking about it with me, and sharing it with all sorts of people. So, you know, John, from the bottom of my heart, I love you. And thank you.
Love you too, man. Thank you.
The opportunity just to be here with you and then to share some stories.
Yeah.
This ranks up there with some of the awesome freaking things I've done. And I mean that sincerely.
Well, we're just getting started, so we have a lot more to do.
Hey, brother.
I appreciate you, man. I'm excited for you. We'll be following the journey. If you haven't yet, go give Sinchon's Coastal Catering a follow on IG, especially on Facebook. He is starting. We're getting him out there. He's starting to make some cool cocktail recipes, cool ideas, cool tips, cool tricks for events, DIY things that are going to help you make that event next level. So go follow it. And thank you so much, Mike. Appreciate you.
Thank you. All right, we just wrapped up an amazing podcast with Johnny Vigo. I want to say thank you so much. We spent some time talking about my background in education, the relationship that was developed with Johnny, and the direction that Sinchon's Coastal Catering is heading. It's a bright future. Got some super cool stuff going on. An amazing conversation. Johnny's the best, man. Thank you so much.